Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Play Unforgettable, would you please?
Unforgettable.
Have you noticed that Obama's starting to look differently?
That's what you are.
Have you noticed he's starting to look like a Parisian nightclub performer? The more he becomes exposed, the more people become hip to who this guy really is and isn't, the more shallow the man actually appears. He looks like, if you look at film noir movies from the 50s, and you see kind of torch singers, bar singers from the 50s in a Parisian bar, I'm reminded of that. Speaking of which, in San Francisco, my favorite city, as you well know, I'm banned in the United Kingdom, actually heard in the city that I created. In radio, I mean, I was the biggest thing in the history of radio. I'm heard from Sacramento, if you can believe this. So, I mean, I still have a huge fan base. Most of the people who listen to me still catch me there on the 650 or whatever. So I go out of the studio and I go down to the waterfront, which I happen to love. I go to the ferry terminal, which is sort of like a Pike Street market. Bakeries, with the best bread in the world. All liberals, I said to you, the best bread in the world. If it was a conservative area, you get white bread that's 2 days old and stale. Creameries, cowgirl. Creamery, I don't eat cheese, but I had Teddy with me. He was during the show, and he loves to smell the cheese, and we're walking around. And I walk up about a half a mile to my friend's place at the waterfront restaurant, Al Falchi, and I sat with him and had a few drinks. And you know what he told me? You'll never believe this. Teddy had, by the way, one of the best appetizers of all time. He had a little hamburger slider. He loved it. He says to me, Michael, he says, somebody, have you heard about this? It was launched here, a new app for cell phones that scans bar goers' faces. I said, what? He said, yeah, it's a new smartphone app called SceneTap. And what it is, it employs facial detection software through cameras that are placed strategically in bars and nightclubs to tell users the age and sexual makeup of an establishment they're thinking of visiting. Now, the problem is that the patrons being scanned by cameras don't know that they're being monitored. Some call this creepy. Some call it an invasion of privacy. But the way this works is this group have installed cameras in bars in San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Athens, Georgia, Bloomington, Indiana, Chicago, Gainesville, Florida, Madison, Wisconsin. Mainly kind of very liberal cities where people have no sense of self-respect and no sense of privacy. And the cameras use facial detection software, which, unlike facial recognition software, only picks up on basic data about people and can't specifically identify faces. And what's the purpose? Well, this info is used to come up with a rundown of ages and sexes so the app can give users real-time updates on which night spots are full of women or men and how old or young the crowd is. What question shall I ask you? I have no idea. If you're reduced to the point that you have to look on a cell phone to see where you should go stalking women, you know, you don't even deserve... Well, whatever. Why finish the sentence? I mean, the bigger question really is, what do you think of Obama's class warfare campaign? Do you think it will get him reelected? He is pitting one class against the other. It is straight out of the Marxist playbook. I pointed it out in Trickle Up Poverty, Trickle Down Tyranny. The man has gone. You got to hand one thing to Axelrod and Obama. You've got to give them one thing. What you see is what you get. I told you he's a Marxist. He's a Marxist. I told you he would engage in class warfare as his final trump card because he has nothing else to play. He's engaging in class warfare. But the problem for Obama is that the class warfare game has divided the Democrat Party. They have not all fallen in line with him. So the fact of the matter is, I don't know that it will get him reelected. I actually think it could actually backfire on Obama. I believe that his class warfare campaign and his race warfare campaign will not get him reelected. And it could be that Romney, you know, the middle of the row, check pants Republican, nice country club Republican, may actually win simply because Obama is so far to the left of his own leftist party called the Democrats that half the Democrat Party will defect from him and by default vote for this Mr. Nice Guy. I don't know. Things are changing. In other words, they're muddling their own election chances. Romney's doing everything he can to not get elected. But Obama is muddling the campaign so badly with his hatred and his deceit that it could wind up dividing the vote. What am I supposed to ask you to call the number now? I call the number now. 1-800-449-8. Here's a man who's worked his whole life to hate the military. Hates the military. Hates police. Hates the church. Let's go down the list of everything that the Marxists hate. You know, I can only take so much of the big lie. This is starting to be worse than Leni Riefenstahl. This is worse than the propaganda machines of totalitarian dictatorships. These are bald-faced lies. There is no progress in America. There is no progress in the American image around the world. They're laughing at us. They're spitting at us. Ask Donald Trump if the world is laughing at us or respecting us. The man is a bald-faced liar. And there's a limit to how much the people can take of this garbage. Is it any wonder I talked about the app and feeding my dog a meat slider in a bar yesterday? It's nice sitting outside. It's a beautiful city. Gorgeous city. When you get away from the social rot of San Francisco created by Nancy Pelosi. When you get away from the social rot, the anti-Catholic rot of Nancy Pelosi. I'm waiting for a cardinal to stand up to her one of these days. I'm waiting for one of the archbishops or cardinals to actually stand up to what this woman stands for and what she's done, Pelosi's values. And on a state level, you have no idea what this Moonbeam has done, what Governor Brown. Here is a man, Moonbeam, who pretended to be a moderate middle-of-the-roader, hoodwinked me through a friend of mine. I gave him money years ago. It's true. And the man now becomes governor, and he goes back. He reverts to the Moonbeam that everyone knew he was. Tax and spend. Attack those who produce. Attack the productive class. Tax and spend. So his new tax, his new tactic is, unless you tax those who earn money in California even more, we're going to close the schools for another month a year. This is so sickening, Jerry. This is another scare tactic, and I don't think the people are going to fall for it. Because we all read your budget. And we know that 50% of the money that you will steal from the most productive taxpayers in the state of California, 50% of it will go for the unfunded pensions that the unions have imposed upon the state of California. It will go for housing and for educating and for medicating non-citizens. And, of course, for stuffing the pensions of politicians like yourself. A lot of people don't realize that the federal government mandates that states provide certain services to non-citizens, whether they like it or not. Now, if Governor Brown really wanted to tighten the budget, he could certainly do so. He could do it by cracking down on hospital visits from non-citizens. He could cut back on education. English as a second language could be slashed, eliminated. My father came here. He didn't speak English. Nobody held him out. Oh, poor boy from Russia. Can we speak to you in your native language? Nobody would have expected that. Cut out English as a second language. So let's start with that. How many billions will that save, Jerry? This fear-mongering of Jerry Brown is identical to the hate-mongering of Barack Obama. It is no different than what we have come to expect from this party of illicit anti-American Democrats. The whole world is laughing at Barack Obama. They're not saluting Barack Obama. Now, either he lives in a bubble and he actually thinks that they're saluting him, but they are not. They're ignoring him. No one cares about the app that takes your picture in a bar. No one cares about anything. Bill Clinton's glamorous fundraiser called Worst Party Ever by Angry Guests. An exclusive event in England hosted by Bill Clinton, attended by a host of celebrity friends. has been criticized after guests who paid up to £1,000 each for tickets for his foundation were left standing outside for hours. Attendees complained that Clinton's event in an underground venue stank with perspiration dripping off the walls, and the rooms were too crowded to even see the former president. I don't know if they missed anything, but one who called it the worst party ever described how angry people were waiting in the queue outside while high-profile guests were admitted, and another condemned the event as unpleasant. Well, what do you expect? I mean, if you're a nobody, where do you expect to be ushered in because you're a nobody, because you paid £1,000? That doesn't get you to touch Bill Clinton. What's £1,000 to him? He went to synagogues and he got $300,000. The people threw themselves on the floor, screaming, oy vey. They all flock together. They hate the country. They believe in global warming. They fly around in Gulfstreams if they have the money. I don't blame them. Gulfstream's a beautiful jet. But if you have a Gulfstream, you don't then go give a speech about global warming. You fly with banana peels. I can see already it's a dud. You want me to get angry now to shock you? I'm not going to get angry. I can't get angry anymore. Let's see. Greek, we're still waiting for the Greeks to exit. How long is this going to go on? You know that they're not going to exit. This is the same as Israel's about to attack Iran. 2 years, 3 years now. Any day Iran's going to get them in Israel, they're going to knock them. Any day they're going to put down them. They're going to put down their phone apps in Israel. They're going to get, and they're going to fly, and David's going to knock out Goliath. Any day Israel's going to knock out Iran. This is going to 3 years. I'm asleep. The man in the seat is asleep. Now we got this one. Greece about to exit the Eurozone. Greece about to go back to the dinar. Greece about to dump the, Europe's about, no one even knows what it's all about. Europe's going to dump Greece, or Greece is going to dump Europe. No one even knows. What are they going to export after this? Dolmus? What do they make there? I don't even know what they make in Greece.
Savage.
Now, I got to tell you, a day in the life of a talk show host is ordinarily rather boring. So once in a while, I have to make sure it isn't boring. So here's what I did. It's like, why do I do this to myself? As I told you, I have several studios around the San Francisco Bay Area, and I shift around according to whim. So I go into the city. I want to see people. I want to have lunch in my favorite greasy spoon Chinese restaurant so I can complain about the indigestion. So I have a studio in an apartment building that's a nightmare, a mess, run by the most, well, just say run by morons. And they've been working on refurbishing the building for well over a year now, wrecking everybody's life with jackhammers and smoke and noise. And nobody can do anything about it because there's no power for a tenant in San Francisco unless you're a homeless bum with a needle sticking out of your arm. If you got a spike hanging out of your arm, you got the whole city behind you. If you're a normal tenant, you have no power whatsoever in this sicko city. So I figured they were through with the scaffolds outside my balcony. And I get there in the morning, and sure enough, there was no scaffold outside my balcony. It was like on the first floor. I said, all right, I picked a good day. I stroll around town. I look at this. I look at that. I go have lunch in my favorite greasy Chinese greasy spoon. I ate the whole plate of chicken curry, got nauseous from it, left, went out in the street like a dazed bumblebee had been sprayed with Raid. The way I wanted to feel, because I don't want to pay attention to the news. I amble over to an antique store, poke my head in. Once in a while, I enjoy it. And I found an RCA Victor composition advertising dog Nipper, circa 1950, height 36 inches. And I said, what a great idea. I think I'm going to buy the RCA Victor dog. It's like a ceramic statue. They want $1,295. Now, I grew up in the antique business. I figured it's worth $5. If an upscale antique store is asking $1,295, it must be worth between $5 and $10, I figure. Since I grew up in the antique business, I figured I'd go back and look it up on Google. Then I found another thing I wanted, an English or American mahogany decanter chest. Remember those chests? When I was a little kid, my father's store, these would come through. I love them. They're like a decanter chest with bottles called decanters that you put whiskeys in. And various beautiful glasses, circa 1810. and the price is $32.50. I figured I'd buy it. It's probably worth $250 on eBay. So I come home and I look up these items. Well, I didn't actually get, I didn't finish the story yet. I put them in my bag, head back up to the apartment with about an hour to go before the show. And lo and behold, nightmare, the scaffold's outside my deck again with jackhammers going and smoke. I have to race up to the apartment, get my bag with stories, race down, jump in my car, which I call Kaiser Wilhelm. I gave it a name. And I have to race out of San Francisco, getting behind every tourist schmuck ever invented, six to a car, gaping, looking over the bridge, down and around, blah, 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 I'm home 30 minutes, here I am, boom. So I look it up on the internet, and it's $99 for the dog. It's a little smaller, but it's $99, not $12.95. And the American or English mahogany decanter circa 1810 I can't find. And here I am. An English or American mahogany decanter chest containing six large and six small gilded decanters, circa 1810. A guy wants $3,250. And the RCA Victor composition advertising dog Nipper, circa 1950. The store wants $1,295. I'm trying to find it if I can buy it for less somewhere. I once was in the streets of North Beach, the once Italian district of San Francisco. Now it's the home to bums and mainland China, with a remnant of a Little Italy left to it, you know, somewhere. It's like sort of like the Little Italy amusement park, North Beach. But 30 years ago, when I first came to San Francisco, there used to be women dressed in black. The old, like, lean Italian women. They used to gossip with each other on the street, whispering. I loved it. And being the kind of guy I am, I would once in a while go up and talk to them. Because wherever I've been in the world, I've had the capacity to go up to strangers and you know, I always get into good conversations for some reason. I don't know how the conversation arose. I was talking to one of the old women. She must have been a good 95, gaunt, probably Sicilian. And I said to her, "Mama, what do you do for health?" I said to her, you know, like, she says to me, there's hardly anything that's wrong with a person that a little coffee, a little wine, and a little gala can't cure. I agree with her 100%. I agree with 100%. Of course, I add a few things to that mixture.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, the failure, Robert Reich, who went to teach at UC Berkeley. I don't know what he's done there to the students since he's been there, but Robert Reich probably thought that since he's been a lifetime wobbly leftist, he would already by this time have been called back by Obama to be a labor secretary or something along the lines of the triangle shirtwaist fire background that he came from. But no, he's still at Berkeley, stuck at Berkeley, and the Obamaites want nothing to do with Reich. So listen to clip 17.
Lame duck Congresses are not known historically to do very magnificent things. I mean, it's pretty clear that John Boehner and Harry Reid are drawing lines in the sand, mainly for bargaining advantage. The hope is that with regard to taxes and letting the Bush tax cuts maybe go on a little bit longer, particularly for the middle class, and that's what the president has wanted, and he stated very specifically, but also avoiding that sequestration, avoiding those major cuts.
Why he's teaching. The reason he's teaching is he can't make a sentence. He goes in circles. You don't know what he's talking about. I would have said it in three sentences. On and on and on. That's why he's teaching. You want to hear something interesting? I told it to my assistant today. He got a kick out of it. He's a young guy. He's 23. He was complaining about a teacher of his. So I said, look, when I was a high school teacher, he said, you were a high school teacher? I said, oh, yeah, many decades ago. I said, I taught in a private school in Manhattan for about a year. And these were like troubled kids. It wasn't like an elite private school for the really brilliant ones or the really rich ones. It was sort of a dumping ground for kids who were troubled, not emotionally screwed up in any way or poor. They weren't particularly rich. They were troubled. In other words, they were loud mouths. They talked out. They were smart kids, basically. So one kid, I don't know, he came up to me that was so smart. He changed my life, this kid. He said, you know what? He said, those who can do and those who can't teach. I was stunned by it. He says, those who can do, those who can't teach. I was stung like by a bee. And of course, what he was saying was not true in the hard sciences or in the medical sciences or the physical sciences. It's true mainly in the soft fields, social sciences, you name it. Those who can do, those who can't teach. And because of it, I decided I wasn't going to teach anymore because I wanted to do something with my life other than, you know, basically boss students around with tests. That's Labor Secretary Robert Reich. If he could do something, he'd be doing it. He wouldn't be teaching. If he really was, you know, really had something on the ball, he'd be running a hedge fund. He'd be working for Soros, maybe as a dresser. You know, he could have gotten a nice job probably dressing Soros in a nice bathing suit on the Miami beaches with the young girls. Probably would have made 10 times more than he does at Berkeley. Yes, sir, I'll bring you the bathing suit. No, sir, you want the hat. Would you like a cool drink? He could have done the thing like that. He probably would have been happier, too. Do you know why I don't like Robert Reich? Let me explain why. It's not solely that he's a communist, a lifetime socialist left-wing wobbly. When his wife, I remember things 20 years ago or so, Robert Reich, you look it up. I think she was teaching at Boston University or Brandeis, one of the two. She came up for tenure. They didn't grant a tenure because she was a rotten scholar, obviously. She sued the university saying, you're denying it because I'm a woman and a minority and a this and a that. And the university had to give her tenure. That's Mr. Fairness. That's like the Prius driver who cuts you off from the right lane and thinks he's holier than thou. You get it? See, I don't forget these things. It's the things like this that I remember that make me a great talk show host. Not that you care one way or the other. It's only radio at the end of the day. It's all it is. Have you heard the Obama campaign trying to attack Mitt Romney on the steel thing? It's sickening because Romney was not even at Bain Capital when the steel company went out of business. How could you blame Romney for a steel company going out of business when steel companies went out of business because Korea was dumping steel on the shores of America? That's why the U.S. steel company went out of business. GST Steel. Listen to clip 9, the short version.
Bain Capital was the majority owner. They were responsible. Mitt Romney was deeply involved in the influence that he exercised over these companies.
They made as much money off it as they could, and they closed it down. They filed for bankruptcy without any concern for the families or the communities.
It was like a vampire. It came in and sucked the life out of us.
It was like watching an old friend bleed to death.
All right, turn it off. In other words, what they're trying to say is that Romney's a vampire, and Romney won't do an attack ad against Obama. This is why he's going to lose. See, I know everything. That's the problem. It's wisdom. At this point, it's just wisdom. I know everything. If I'm wrong, I'm proven wrong, and I admit it. I know enough to admit when I'm wrong, but I know most everything. And it's very hard to fool me. I can see everything for what it is. It's painful to live in a country with such dumbbells. Now, was it ever any different? I don't know. I honestly don't know if it was ever any different. I do know that with the pervasiveness of the disgusting left-wing media, the propaganda's never been this bad. But then again, when I look back, when you think about it, when I was a kid, you had three channels, you had two, channel two, CBS, four, NBC, five, it was like some offbeat junk station from New Jersey, I think, and then seven was like ABC. You had the three networks, then you had the public broadcast garbage, the do-gooders, but no one ever watched that. That was like they did like classical music, and people who wanted to like impress you would have it on when you came into their house. Those are people who like bought the Encyclopedia Britannica for their son to make you feel intimidated. But look at the propaganda. There was no choice. It was all the same. All the news was identical. They went to the same stories at the same time with the same breaks. So maybe the propaganda was just as bad. But were the people as dumb? No, they weren't, because there was less college then. There were fewer college graduates in my day. So people had more native intelligence that was not squeezed out of them by the dummies in the colleges. Now, I would say people were not quite as brainwashed. The media was just as biased. This is Walter Cronkite giving you as much Bolshevik garbage as I can every night. This is Tom Brokaw. You're listening to Dan Rather. Every one of them putting out the same drivel every night. This went on for 30 years. I remember the early show. I used to watch it every night after school, before, after homework, before, come home from school, play, sit at the tray, eat the food, the steak, the French fries, the cherry vanilla ice cream. I'm still living. It's astounding. Shocking. Just shocking. The diet would have killed. If you had a lab experiment, if you were Mengele and you took children and fed them the diet I was raised on, half of them would have died by the age of 13. No, it was the opposite of the starvation diet. If you have a lab animal and you want to induce atherosclerosis as quickly as possible in the lab animal, you would have fed them what I was fed. It didn't do it. It just didn't knock me out. And I didn't take vitamins at the time. Who knows? Who knows what? I mean, maybe I'm stronger than I think. Who knows? You don't really know at a certain point. I mean, I've been on multivitamin, mega doses of vitamins for 40 years now. Since I started to become a student of Linus Pauling and Ewan Cameron, well, it was Pauling mainly and that group. Mega doses of vitamin C, vitamin E, various secret herbal formulas, and rivers of alcohol. Absolutely rivers of alcohol. I don't mean, I never drink during the day. I have never, ever, except once, I wanted to see what it would do to me. I don't drink during the day. Ask anyone who knows me. I mean, if I'm on the air, I mean, off the air, maybe. It makes me tired. I don't want it. But I've had rivers of alcohol after shows in order to get my mind. I mean, I have to calm down. How do you think? You think this is easy to do after the show? What do you think you got to do? Yeah, I'm going to run now with a pulse with the clock on my hand. I don't do that. I think it's very bad for a person when they're stressed to run, incidentally. I think it's the worst thing you could possibly do to yourself. You know that when you're very tired, you shouldn't run, you shouldn't push yourself? It's the opposite of what you're told. Why do you think so many men are having heart attacks in their 50s? I don't want to scare you. It's true. They think, oh, I don't feel good. I'm stressed out. I had a bad day at work. I think I'll run across the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, and there's a catastrophic, heroic heart attack. Jim Fex. Remember Jim Fex in the 70s, the runner? The very, very famous long-distance runner. Okay. Massive coronary on a road in Vermont on one summer. He was a guy who said, diet doesn't matter, vitamins don't matter, all you need is exercise. Thin, lean heart attack. Died in his 50s. Because it's a stress. The human condition, in the history of humanity, in the history of human beings, no man in his 50s was ever made to run like this unless he was being pursued by an enemy. I mean, then he ran out of the village if he didn't have a weapon to defend himself. He ran like that. But the human being is not made to run at that age. I don't mean supposed to sit in a barca lounger with a clicker, although it's not such a bad idea. You know, moderate, everything, a little moderation in your exercise. Why must you run like a lunatic? And then look at the damage to the knees, the hips, the joints. Ask any doctor. Any lifetime runner, any one of them, the knees are gone, the hips are gone by 45, 50. I am a bicycle. I mean, I've bicycled since I'm a child. I don't do as much as I should lately, but I'm talking a mile or two a day in a fairly moderate incline. Moderation, same thing. Why do you push your body? I don't understand it. It's like extreme diet, same thing with extreme exercise. Same thing with Obama and extreme left-wingism. See, Obama is an extremist leftist, meaning a Marxist. He is not a moderate liberal. He's an extremist liberal. In that sense, he's going to take the country over a cliff. The man inherits a $1 trillion deficit, and he makes it a $4 trillion deficit, and he says that that's fiscal sanity. Nobody on earth could understand this except a lunatic who's never, ever run a lemonade stand. See, now Romney could do that. I mean, this is what he should be doing. When Obama took power, there was a $1 trillion deficit, and now there's a $4 trillion deficit. The man doesn't know the first thing about business. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve of this ad. You'll never see it. You will never, ever see one ad that shows you who Obama really is.
Wait, hang on before I go. I read an article on how the economy has affected consumers and that customer service and return policies are really now the main reasons people choose to do business with a company. Case in point, it's time to replace the blinds, shades, or shutters in your home. You take your measurements, you head off to the big home improvement store. Sure, they take your order. But when your window coverings arrive, you find out they don't fit because the schmuck from the plumbing department gave you bad advice. You trudge back and they tell you, sorry, no returns on custom orders. Not at blinds.com. Not at blinds.com. See, even if you mismeasure, which almost never happens, they'll remake it for free. Who does that? There are also over 100 real experts in-house happy to assist. Get free color samples, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. Plus, expert installers if you need one. That's Blinds.com, where their prices absolutely crush home improvement store prices. Blinds.com, I've used them for blinds. I love them, Blinds.com.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
So let's go back to the callers. We got Martin, who's been holding kindly from Cincinnati, Ohio. Martin, go ahead, please. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I tell you, you earlier were talking about the complete freedom, and just like with the socialism, how it's a bad thing. I believe complete, total liberty is the good thing, because then people can do whatever they want. And if they choose to do something...
Hold on, slow down. Come on, Martin, you're pulling my leg, because you know that there's no such thing as absolute freedom.
Well, but if there was...
You mean the freedom, let's say, for you to walk down the street and grab a child off the street and kiss them? Is that what you mean by freedom?
No, could be viewed as like infringing on that child's rights. So that would be against the law.
Okay. Wait. You just said against the law. Why would we need law if you believe in total freedom? Why would we need any law at all? So wait, you're agreeing that we need some law, correct?
Yes, the Constitution.
Hold on. Why do we need some law?
Well, because we can have order that way. Chaos is, like, unproductive.
All right, so we agree, therefore, that total freedom would lead to anarchy. So you and I both agree that we don't need anarchy. We don't want anarchy. It would be harmful to the freedom that we both want to enjoy, the freedoms we wish to enjoy, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so an orderly society needs some laws. We agree on that, but not too many laws, not laws that infringe on our fundamental freedoms and liberty. We agree on that.
Maybe. I believe in, like, the total freedom to do whatever we want as long as it doesn't interfere or infringe on anyone else's rights to do what they want, which is...
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good in theory. That sounds good in theory. But there are limitations to that, I mean, that we can start arguing over. You do understand that... Let's start with the obvious, a highway, a roadway, four corners. We both agree you need red lights, yellow lights, and green lights, or else cars would crash into each other, right?
That's correct, yes.
All right, wait, so that's a good analogy for why we need some laws. Because otherwise we'd be crashing into each other or shooting each other or molesting each other or whatever, punching each other in the nose over the slightest disagreement, correct?
That's different than traffic law. That goes back to our freedom of liberty. The traffic law is essentially just structure, just like building codes, like things have to be buried 3 feet because of the frost line. But as far as our choices for moral behavior, I believe that's the government's complete hands-off, because my view is that...
You mean complete hands-off. So, again, we're arguing you should be able to go up and kiss a child in the street?
Well, I mean, at one time people did that in some cultures. I mean, as long as my intent wasn't malicious, then it's not...
Well, what culture could they go up and take somebody else's child and kiss them on the lips?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, the Pope gives people kisses.
You're pulling my leg. You know that if you did that, someone would probably shoot you if you grabbed their child and kissed them on the lips and they didn't want you to. I mean, come on, you'd probably be tarred and feathered in this country today. I agree with you that people are very paranoid about their children to an extent I've never seen anything. I'm afraid to even look at a child kindly in this society. Things have become so bad. But I don't believe in total freedom. And look, are you an educated person? You know that there are no absolutes. There's no such thing as absolute freedom, Martin.
I believe there is. I mean, okay, let's look at... I know you've talked
about... Wait. The first principle of science, or one of the primary principles of science, is that there are no absolutes. So how can you argue, then, that there is a thing called absolute freedom?
Because it's our Constitution. We should be allowed...
No, it is not. The Constitution does not promise you absolute freedom. It actually promises you relative freedom. It says you shall have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's fundamentally what it promises. Nothing more, nothing less. But it doesn't mean you shall be able to grab your neighbor's son and kiss him on the lips, Martin. I'm sorry. Don't try it in my neighborhood. I know some ex-warriors with young children who would not like it.
Savage.
Story comes out and says that there's a new Bible out. Of course, it's from the Reform Jewish movement, which, as far as I'm concerned, let's just say doesn't appeal to me. I don't like Reform anything. I mean, either you're with God or you're not with God. So this idea of putting out a Bible that has no reference to gender is insanity. And, what you know, if Reform Judaism keeps this up, what they're going to do is drive the younger and younger Jews who are desiring a relationship with God away from the temple. And they're going to continue to search in other vineyards, foreign vineyards. It's the same with Christianity. The more Christianity flirts with this non-gender Bible, God is not a man, God is not a woman, God is not this, God is not that, more and more the children are going to experiment with Buddhism first. And I'll make a prediction that millions of them find Islam as the only religion that will satisfy them. I'm not suggesting it, but that's what's going to happen. Anyone who has a desire to find God, who goes into a temple or into a church and doesn't find God, they're going to continue to search for God. And what the true believer needs is an absolute. And they want a religion that's absolute. And the more Judaism moves away from an absolute view of God and faith and morality, the more Christianity moves away from God, faith, and morality, the more millions move away from Judaism and Christianity. Some of them never come back to religion. Many of them become sort of fallen Jews, or let's say lapsed Catholics or lapsed Protestants or lapsed Jews. And then some of them stumble into Buddhism and they misinterpret Buddhism completely. They think it means do as you will. They think it's Rabelais rather than Buddhism. They think it means do as you will, that it's a religion of freedom. It's the opposite of a religion of freedom. Again, this is liberalism misinterpreting Buddhism. And eventually a true believer will become a Muslim, as did Rat Boy. Jonathan Lynn, remember Rat Boy? Remember old Rat Boy went to fight for them? His parents were Catholic. The father left his mother for another man. The kid became a whack job. So of course he's going to search for an absolutist vision of God and not understand how this could happen to him.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
And then we're going to go to something else, and something else, and something else. And it is the Savage Nation. Combination doo-wop, jazz. I'm in a 50s mood. Why Must I Love Every Year? Is that like a liberal thing that all years are equal? Moral equivalence between years? What's the worst year of my life so far? Never thought about it that way. What's the best year of my life so far? Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past. Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Walking around with a transistor radio, crew cut haircut, a little kid with corduroy pants. Innocent. No sexual feelings, nothing. All that was on my head was baseball. But now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is Jingle Bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA. That's all.
USA in your
That's
Chevrolet. America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. It's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music? You have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen. You have to play Johnny Philip Morris. And then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead. See if you can do that.
Drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone.
Come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. I'm in Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually beep. I say it. Turn this off. I don't go for this. I don't go for it. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti on. But the fact is, nobody really that we knew had those kind of cash in the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So we didn't, and you had to take a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is, a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. And you couldn't really afford it, and you were a faker. That means 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know?
Savage.
You got to laugh at some mild infirmities. You know, a guy gets in a fight when he's a kid, he gets a tooth knocked out. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. It's a tooth. That's all. That's all. It's only a tooth. It's nothing. It could have been worse. Because I remember when I was a kid, like 18, 15, you know, I never thought I'd live past 40. I really didn't. Come from a family of horrendous male longevity. I don't blame them. It was just the way it is. So my friends and I used to joke. We used to joke when we were kids. We'd look at older men, guys over 30, some of whom were bald. And I remember saying to my friend, and I said, you know what? I'm not worried about baldness because I'll probably never live that long. And we used to joke about it. I swear, young guys are funny. We always had a fatalistic view of things. But as time, and there was another story I'll tell you from that era. I remember I told you I had a friend whose father was the tough guy in the whole like thing in the ghetto, All the other guys had little stores or little jobs. This guy owned a bar on the Upper East Side of Manhattan before it was cool. He was a professional bar owner wearing a suit, not a bartender, a gambler. He was a real, you know, let's say cool type of guy, but he was a man's man. So naturally the boys would gravitate to the toughest of the men because boys will. Boys will always be drawn to the tough guy. I didn't say nasty, I didn't say evil, but the toughest man is usually the tribal leader anyway. So guys liked him. He had a manly way about him. He talked quietly, never spoke loud, hardly spoke at all. And sometimes when the families would get together in those days, all the families got very often got together on weekends in someone's apartment or house.
Okay, hang on before I go to break. You need to know this. There's three kinds of people. Those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened. These are tough economic times, but tough people can make things happen. Like Jenny. This is her income at home story. Here's what she wrote. I spent my life working in the corporate world with far too little time with my kids. Then out of the blue, I got laid off. I was looking for a job when I learned about incomeathome.com. So I ordered my decision pack, got a call from my coach, and got started. In my first full month, I made $1,300, and I'm on my way to making more than I've ever made. And I do it around my family's needs. Now look, some earn less, many earn more, and some earn a lot more. So go to incomeathome.com to see the results you can expect. No matter your age or education, you can literally earn money from your kitchen table. Make it happen for you and your family at incomeathome.com. Write it down, incomeathome.com. You got it? Incomeathome.com.
Savage.
Make no mistake about what I'm about to tell you. There have been several elections since the imposter was foisted upon us. There have been several elections when the American people were allowed to go to the polls and to say what they believed to be true. Ever since the imposter was foisted upon us by George Soros and other forces that we don't even know. And in both cases, in virtually every case as a matter of fact, the people have voted down the imposter and his policies. Make no mistake about it, the vermin in the media are tricking you. And just as they covered the story up across America, they're covering up the fact that if the election were held today, as tepid as Romney is, he would beat Obama by at least 20 points. There's no question in my mind that this victory in Wisconsin spells the end of Obama's tyranny over the American people. That is, unless they can get enough illegal aliens to vote as many times as possible. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. My recommendation to Governor Romney is to get rid of your team that is killing you. Get rid of those idiots who are running your campaign. They ran McCain off the rails. They're going to run you off the rails. And learn something from Scott Walker. Learn something from Scott Walker. Learn that Scott Walker says it like it is. And stop mincing words, Romney. And stop acting like a wimp, Romney. And stop acting like a putz, Romney. I want you to listen to this for 1 minute. Because one of the first things Walker said in his victory speech, which struck me as I was cooking spaghetti, is he talked about God and prayers. Something that we are all desperate to hear in this degenerate nation. Listen to clip one.
Next, I particularly want to thank you for your prayers, because for the last year and a half, the thing that has sustained Tonette and I and Matt and Alex is people many times, people I've never met before, come off the line, come off the farm and say, Governor, we're praying for you and your family. I can't tell you what that means to me.
So here's a man who said that prayer sustained him, that the people's prayers sustained him. And on the other hand, we have an atheist for a president, so far as I could tell. Forget the Muslim part of it. He's just a narcissistic atheist. And then we have Romney, who's obviously a very religious man, who's been intimidated by Wolf Blitzer and the other rats on the left into even mentioning his faith. No, Mr. Romney, it's time to mention your faith. Yes, Mr. Romney, it's time to get rid of those Brutuses who are running you off the rails. with their tepid campaign. Mr. Romney, listen to me. Tear down that wall, Mr. Romney. Tear down that wall of those Republican advisors who are destroying your campaign. And go hire Scott Walker's campaign manager. Go hire Scott Walker's campaign directors and get rid of the Brutuses who are destroying you.
Savage.
Question is this. Do you still go to museums, or have museums become museums in the United States of America? I went to the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco. I haven't been there, and I must have been 5 or 6 years. I used to live in museums. I grew up in an antique store. I grew up looking at art, and I spent a lot of time in museums. I always have, but I stopped going years ago. And then every exhibit was so PC, you know, this and that and that and that. But you know, I said, wait a minute. Although they have destroyed the museums to a great extent with this politically expedient dreck, AIDS art and art from every little subculture in the world, they put a basket from Guatemala next to a Rembrandt and they tell you they're culturally equal. You hear? Nevertheless, the European collections are still there and they still stand out and they are still worth going to see. So let me begin at the end. I leave the museum after 2 hours, and I come out feeling enlightened. And I use the word enlightened in the way it truly was written and meant to be understood. I felt lighter inside. My spirit was lifted from association with great art. I stood nose to nose with Hopper and with Church and with other great European artists. You know, an inch from the oil paint is an astonishing thing to behold. And you can literally feel the movements of the brush. And it does something to your mind that you can't compare with anything else, certainly not television or a movie. So I saw some of my favorite old paintings, and they were amazingly fabulous. And I just love the intelligent young families with young children, mainly Europeans, I must tell you, sadly. Very few American families, mainly French families with their kids. They still take their young children to the museums, as I did with my children. But I'll tell you what I'm here to talk about, not museums so much. I'm going to talk about Ajenta. Now, Ajenta is a busybody in American slang. There's an exhibit in the museum that is just breathtakingly, frighteningly hard to believe. It's in a museum. It's their lead exhibit. It's called Nan Kempner, American Chic. I have to read you the press release. The native San Franciscan's famous style comes to the DeYoung Museum. So I said, this can't be. They cannot be doing this. But yes, they were doing it. Here's a woman I never heard of. She died in 2005, I learned when I went there. And her dresses were in showcases. But wait, it gets worse. There was a whole glass case devoted to this woman's shoes. Her shoes. So I stood there laughing out loud. People thought I was crazy in the museum. And I said, by God, it's every Yenta's dream. There they are, the Yenta's shoes under glass in a museum after she's dead. So a guard came over to me and he said to me, he whispered, he said, you're 100% right. He said, don't tell anyone I said so. He couldn't believe it. I said, in all the years you've been in a museum, have you ever seen a woman's shoes put on display in a showcase? He said, never. So I said, this exhibit is the ultimate nothing. It's the ultimate nothing. I got to read you the press release from a museum that still has some of the finest art in the world. And you have to ask yourself, who is in charge of our museums that they would put a woman's dresses in the showcase and her shoes? Well, wait, let me just read this campy stuff to you. When I read the word the native San Franciscan's famous style, first of all, the first word that offends me is the word native. So far as I know, she's not of Miwok heritage. I don't understand why people who are so out of town as native San Franciscans make such an issue of being native San Franciscans. What does that mean? What does that qualify you for? Why is that special? What do you mean native? What does that mean anymore? This is a press release for a major museum in the United States of America in the year 2007. This is what it's come down to with the assault upon our institutions in this country by the illegitimate left. This is the kind of garbage they're showing.
Savage.
We'll be right back. you are listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I went on to a mountain this morning. I normally bicycle in the morning, not early, late in the morning, after I've done all my emails and had the breakfast and calculated how much cholesterol versus how much fish oil versus how much vitamin E versus how many milligrams of this and milligrams of that before I titrated my body ready for another day on the slopes of America. Then I go out in a bike ride, but I didn't want to ride today. I'm bored out of my mind. So I hiked up a mountain in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so I go up to an eerily quiet mountain in the Bay Area and hike by myself. And I look at the rocks and I try to say to myself, Michael, you're a trained scientist. You're in the media, which is a pretty low-life job to begin with. You try to elevate the dialogue to a certain extent in what you do. You don't succeed, obviously, because the people only want to hear the mud. They don't want to hear about anything above the layer at the bottom of the ocean. They want to lay with the crustaceans, because apparently the politicians today are like crustaceans. Zero leadership. And I look at this, and I realize that the rocks I'm looking at on top of this mountain, these bluish rocks, were a result of a cataclysm that began about 165 million years ago. And they were thrown up into the air, onto the surface of the earth at that time, onto the top of this mountain. You say, well, wait, now you're getting off the track. Now you're talking about serpentine rocks on the top of a mountain. What does that have to do with the election and Obama the communist? Well, I don't know what it has to do with it. I mean, you know, you ask yourself, if you're in this business, try to put some perspective on this. You have one gang of interests versus another gang of interests. They're called Democrat gang, Republican gang. You have two competing philosophies as to how the economy should be run. One gang says, take from everybody who earns and gives it to the non-earners. Tax those who work and don't tax those who earn very little. The other people say, wait a minute, that's not fair. But fundamentally, there's no difference in them socially. That's why today I had to pull myself out of all of this and go up to the serpentine rich areas of this mountain and look at some of the mountaintop. And as I'm looking at the rocks, I got to tell you, it's related to the economy in a way. I know I'm a little, you know, discursive here, but I look at the big rocks on the top of this mountain, and they're made up of magnesium, nickel, cobalt, chromium, etc. And I think back to the Civil War that almost bankrupted America. And I realized that here in California, in the neighboring state of Nevada, we had, which was once the largest silver stores, I think, discovered at the time, the Comstock Lode. And do you know that the Comstock Lode of silver was used to pay off the Civil War debt? Now, think of what I just said to you. The war cost a great deal of money. The war nearly bankrupted America. But in those days, the politicians couldn't just print money. The money was tied to silver and gold. And so they used the silver, the minerals, in other words, in the earth of Nevada, the natural resources of Nevada, to pay off the war debt. Now, speed the clock forward. We have the Iraq War, which cost this country about $3 trillion, according to some estimates. Those ungrateful SOBs in Iraq have not sent us so much as a barrel of oil because we haven't taken it, nor have we demanded it. You know what I feel about that. We should have taken the oil to pay off the war debt at the very least. But the war debt was never paid off, and that was the beginning of our bankruptcy. Now, you can blame the welfare state all you want, and believe me, there's plenty of blame for the welfare state in terms of our bankrupt state. But the fact of the matter is, it was the war in Iraq that probably began the road that we will never come back from. We have not yet paid off the Iraq war debt. We're not paying off the Afghanistan war debt. Where in the world do you expect this to come from? I ask myself every day, when in fact they're not paying off the debt. What should we talk about? Serpentine rocks? Would you like me to talk about hiking on the mountain today? Serpentine rocks? And the fact that within 110 years, everyone listening to the show will be dead? Do you realize we all share something in common? We're all traversing through the universe at the same time. And that within 110 or so years, everyone listening to this program, in fact, everyone on the planet, whether they were just born or they're 95 years old, will be off this planet. You'll be gone. And you'll just be part of the compost, if at all. And that when you look at a mountain like this and you realize that it was created about 165 million years ago, you know, you realize that life unto itself is a miracle. Our place on this earth is miraculous. It's only for a short dance in the sun that we're here to begin with. How much can I talk about what these empty suits from television have to say about reality? How much can we take of this? What country are we living in that we permit this to go on? How did the system devolve to this point that we, the people, don't even vote and we watch others vote? How can we take any more of this? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I'd like to point out something on my website that I don't see in many places. There are pictures from D-Day that I'd like you to look at. You want to see faces? They look like the boy next door. They weren't any different than the kid next door. They were just like the boy next door. And they went there and they were scared, and many of them didn't want to be there. Most of them didn't want to be there. They would rather have stayed home with their girlfriends. They would rather have hid under the cover or gone to the movies, but they couldn't. They had to go there. And when they did, they gave us our freedom. That's exactly the reality of what happened in World War II. And look at what we have in the White House today. A narcissist, a man who cavorts with the likes of rock and roll stars as opposed to war heroes. It's enough to make you sick. But America knows the truth about Obama. They know he's an imposter. And the stock market knows that he's an imposter. And the only way that Romney can win, as I can tell, is to stop playing the middle and start playing like Walker, who was anything but a firebrand. Remember, Scott Walker is a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican. He is simply a fiscal conservative who risked everything for the sake of doing what was right for his state, and in this case, probably for the country. He risked everything for the sake of what was right for the state of Wisconsin. That's what he did it for. And he's the first governor in American history who has ever survived a recall election. And this, mind you, is in a Democrat-controlled state. This is in a state that has a long history of far-left activism. Wisconsin is a very left-wing state. And did you know that 4 out of 10 union members voted for Walker for him to retain his job? 40% of people in unions knew what was good for the state. And this should be the beginning. The next one to go should be Jerry Brown in California. And the reason I say that this could happen is because two cities in the state of California yesterday revised the pensions of their cities because they knew they were going broke, and these were Democrat-controlled cities. The city of San Diego scaled back the pensions that the cops and firemen were taking out of the city because they were unsustainable. And even Democrats said, we can't afford these pensions. We all like our cops, we all like our firemen, but we can't afford these kinds of gold-plated pensions. These are insane. Pushed down our throats by these unions. And, of course, this is what's going to happen. Voters in California back pension cuts for city workers, even in Democrat-controlled cities, just as Wisconsin residents voted not to recall Governor Scott Walker, who has become an enemy of bloated pensions. Two California cities dealt blows of their own to organized labor. San Diego and San Jose, both Democrat control. Overwhelmingly in these Democrat cities of California, voters approved ballot initiatives designed to help balance ailing budgets by cutting retirement bennies for city workers. 70% of San Jose, California voters favored scaling back pensions. 70% in a Democrat-controlled city, to show you how out of touch Jerry Brown is with reality, and to show you what liars the rats in the media are. The fact of the matter is, even Democrats recognize that these skyrocketing pension costs are killing them. That's right. And so as I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, if you know which way the wind is blowing, it's certainly not blowing in the way of Barack Obama and big unions. No way on earth is it blowing that way. These initiatives in California should provide models for other cities and for the state government where pension reform efforts have been stalled by Governor Brown. But the desire for pension reform in California and America is huge. That is why Scott Walker retained his seat for the first time in American history. 1-800-449-8255. It's a big day for America. And if you know which way the wind blows, you know it's blowing against the communist movement in America. I'll be right back.
Wait, hang on before I go. I read an article on how the economy has affected consumers and that customer service and return policies are really now the main reasons people choose to do business with a company. Case in point, it's time to replace the blinds, shades, or shutters in your home. You take your measurements, you head off to the big home improvement store. Sure, they take your order. But when your window coverings arrive, you find out they don't fit because the schmuck from the plumbing department gave you bad advice. You trudge back and they tell you, sorry, no returns on custom orders. Not at blinds.com. Not at blinds.com. See, even if you mismeasure, which almost never happens, they'll remake it for free. Who does that? There are also over 100 real experts in-house happy to assist. Get free color samples, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. Plus, expert installers if you need one. That's blinds.com.
Savage.
Now, I believe Freud's theories about sex are as relevant as ever. And so, although some of them have undergone revision, many current psychologists think that the founder of psychoanalysis was completely wrong about everything. He had everything backwards, and they've tried to undo what he did. It's part of the deconstruction of Western civilization, by the way. By bringing down Freud's theories, so they think, they can bring down and collapse all of Western civilization and completely turn civilization on its head. There are certain things you can't change, and you cannot take a giant and turn him into a Lilliputian, particularly if you yourself are a Lilliputian and not a giant. The fact of the matter is, sexuality has a central place in our psyche. So you say, well, okay, I don't want a college lecture today on the Savage Nation. I've heard all this, or I haven't. I'm not interested. I think that I would rather talk about something positive, which is, if you're driven by sexual thoughts or urges, how have you sublimated them into something positive? I think that's what's important to think about. Not whether you're sick. Okay, but how have you channeled your hypersexuality, so to speak, into something positive? Okay, that's an important discussion, because I would argue that all of civilization is built upon sexual energy, if you want to take it from a strictly... I am probably strictly, from a psychological point of view, a Freudian in that regard, even though I'm not a therapist at all. I never pretended to be, nor do I want to be. But if you were to ask me what school of psychology, Savage, do you follow, it would be Freudianism. Because he was a giant. He was the founder of psychoanalysis. But even he had his limitations, and he acknowledged it. Even he once said, if I remember correctly, that not everything was about sex. And he once commented, you know, he said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Okay, so let's not get carried away. You know what I'm saying? He understood that there was a limitation even to his theories. Now, I know many of you don't agree with Freudianism, but that's really not what the show is about right now. It's how do you use the energy, your sexual energy. New York City, WOR, Nando, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, you know, I'm a psychologist in New York City, and I agree with you that Freud was a giant in a lot of ways, but he did get some things backwards. For example, he assumed that the disturbance was sex-based. But a lot of people get disturbed first and foremost about other things like ego, their status, their anger, their rage, and then they employ all kinds of methods to...
Well, let me see. I'm not here to dispute them. You because you... Hold it. I'm not going to dispute because you know more about it than I do, but I want to see if I can follow your ideas. You said that the anger and the rage control them, but what drives the anger and rage is what I'm interested in.
I think... From a modern cognitive behavioral point of view, it's the stuff they tell themselves. You know, you and I can look at the same situation, and we tell ourselves different things. If your premise is one of, let's say, an unconstrained vision, you're more liberal. If you have more of a constrained, tragic view, you're more conservative. So both of us can look at the
Wait a minute, I like it. That was pretty glib of you. Wait, yeah. I want to hear that again. Let me hear that again. That was beautiful. Let me hear it again and see if I agree with it.
Well, this is a theory that's been out there, I guess, for like sort of a dozen years or so, which is that some of us have sort of a tragic view of life, which is that there are constraints on the world, you can't have everything you want, and those people tend to become conservative.
Hold on, let me think about that. I have that viewpoint, but I don't think that's why I'm a conservative. But okay, now give me the liberal viewpoint.
That's one factor. But then another factor is if you believe I can have it all, in fact, I deserve it all, and somebody should provide it, otherwise the world is wrong and unfair towards me, then you tend to become more liberal.
You mean that the world owes you a living, in other words?
Yeah. Right. Now, that's
all right.
But I would
just add to this, since we're getting into the strictly political, that I was speaking with a boatsmith today, a man who came out and fixed some wood on my boat today. He's an expert in mechanics. And we were working together. I mean, I was watching him. He was taking out broken screws and fixing a broken rail. And he's a businessman. And he said to me, every businessman he knows on the Sausalito waterfront is ultimately a conservative politically because they don't like hyper-regulation and they hate high taxation. And they all love my show, is what he was saying. So in other words, even though they live in this liberal area of San Francisco and they work on the Sausalito waterfront in the boat industry, anyone in business recognizes that big government is against them. I don't think that has anything to do with emotions or sexuality.
But that's right. And people can get disturbed and then use sexuality. But even there, you know, if you have a moral view, which is everyone should be equal, then you're going to view injustice as anything that makes more money for one.
Well, I don't believe that. I don't believe everyone can be equal.
Right.
All we have to do is look at a basketball game and understand that there are some people who are better at basketball than others.
Right. Well,
okay, and then I apply that to every sphere of the world. You're not going to take everyone and turn them into a nuclear physicist, for example, or a surgeon. That's absurd. That's absolutely the communist point of view. And you know that that went on in communist China after the revolution, which is what scares the heck out of me and makes me sick when I listen to these unrequited leftists who tell me that every moron in America can become a brain surgeon if only they were given the chance. That's utter nonsense.
I agree with you. In fact, that's called the moralistic fallacy, that because I might be disadvantaged in some way, it's wrong, and therefore it isn't so. That's really a fallacy that says that if it's wrong, it isn't so, and that doesn't follow.
Well, look, you're a psychologist, and I have sympathy for educated people in this field, but I want to ask you, said Freud had it backwards. Tell me how he had it backwards.
Well, he had it half right in that sex, really, not sex evolved to get our genes into the next generation. So in that sense, he was correct. But he said that he made these fixed rules about these stages that you have to go through, and that if you didn't properly go through these stages, then you'd be messed up in life and have a...
Oh, what, the oral, the anal, the phallic, et cetera? Yeah, that whole theory?
I think he made all that up. And but the reality is that when people get disturbed of various sorts because they put themselves down, or they put others down, or they put the world down, they get enraged, or they get grandiose, then they're so upset that they use different means to appease themselves, whether it's more regulation or hurting others or...
But what about in Freud's view that sexuality as the causation of all neurosis? Would you agree with some of that, or all of it, or none of it?
I think you got to be very careful. I mean, obviously, sex is important in the sense that it motivates a lot of what we do. Now, a lot of that is unconscious. He was correct about that, because let's say if I study painting or something, I'm not consciously thinking that this is going to get me laid. On the other hand, it might help me get that.
Well, what do you think people go to museums for?
Yeah, right. So.
I'm joking, but how many people that are in museums are there to meet somebody? You have to ask yourself, you think everyone's there just to look at the paintings and the sculptings? I would think a lot of people are going there to meet sophisticated people looking at paintings and sculptings. Yeah. In addition to looking at the art, they're pretending they're only looking at the painting, but maybe through the corner of their eye and the corner of their mind, they're hoping to meet somebody like themselves. Somebody else who appreciates fine art.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Weapon dates bowhead whale to 1800s. Some son of a rat bum Inuit, an Eskimo, kills a 150-year-old whale, 130-year-old whale, and they find the weapon fragment in the old whale in its neck that showed it survived a similar hunt over 100 years ago. The tip of the bomb lance fragment, patented in 1879, that was removed from the neck of a bowhead whale killed off the Alaskan coast in May, rather. Right? So now you read the whole story. Embedded under its blubber was a 3.5-inch arrow-shaped projectile that tells us the whale is between 150 and 130 years old. So now you read it, you read it, you read it, and you say, wait a minute, who is permitted to kill a whale this old? So you read on to the whole story, and you realize it was the Eskimos, the Inuits. Now, they're sacred cows, as you well know. They're like one of the sacred minority groups in the world. So they have a hunting quota for the Alaskan whale, and they're allowed to kill 255 whales by 10 villages over 5 years. Why would they be allowed to kill a 130-year-old whale? To me, this guy committed a crime. I'd like to hunt down the Inuit who did this, and I think he should be tried for animal cruelty. How do you like that? I don't like killing an old whale. I don't like the idea of an old whale being killed. An animal that is so smart, that has survived so long, all the perils of the sea, all the perils of mankind, all the perils of the predators and of disease, gets hunted by some toothless hack up there who is allowed to hunt them with some modern weapon. That Inuit should go to jail for animal cruelty, in my opinion. So I know what many of you, where are you going, Mike? Yeah, well, I'm an independent, okay? I'm an independent guy, and I think through things. This is how I see the world. So make of it what you will. Don't confuse me with a Republican. Please, whatever you do, don't insult me. What are you going to say about it? That he shouldn't? That it's his right? It's his tribal right to kill whales? Well, what other tribal rights are there? That the Native American could kill buffalo? They're not killing buffalo anymore, are they? Only Ted Turner gets to kill buffalo and sell them in delicatessens in San Francisco. Ted Turner, environmentalist, kills buffalo or has buffalo killed for him in the slaughterhouses down there. Low cholesterol meat, buffalo meat. I ate it once. It's like bad beef stew. I wouldn't eat buffalo. There's certain animals I don't want to eat. I don't want to eat whale meat. Why do they need to eat whale meat, those guys up there? They have everything from us now down here. They got welfare galore. They don't live in the ice hut anymore. They live in a nice house we gave them. Welfare house, color TV, car, 4x4, a gas-powered sled. What was the crap? They got to hunt a whale. They got everything they want. I mean, it's flown in. Safeway brings it up to them. There's no need for those bums to shoot whales anymore, particularly a 130-year-old whale. Yeah, don't call me on this. It's just heartbreaking, the vicious Inuit. So you're like, oh, man, an Inuit, savage. So he called an Eskimo, an Inuit, a native Alaskan, vicious. What, they're not allowed to be vicious? They're all good? They're all Nanook of the North sitting up there what are you people, crazy? Haven't you learned yet? You haven't learned yet. You haven't learned nothing yet. There's vicious vermin in every race, and there's saints in every race. This guy should be hunted down and arrested for animal cruelty for killing a 130-year-old whale. That's my opinion. It's a desecration. Patrick, WOR, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I happen to agree with you. I'm an independent with conservative leanings, but I also believe in wildlife conservation. Is a quote.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being a rationalist.
Here's a quote by Gandhi. He says that you have a reflection on people on how they treat their animals. So how are these people? What's the reflection on them? I mean,
tell me about the sacred Inuit up there without teeth, chewing on rawhide and eating sugary foods and watching Oprah Winfrey. Well, why should they kill whales? Who gives them the right to kill a whale? What do you mean it's their heritage? Their heritage went out the window a long time ago. heritage my behind. You're telling me gambling is the Native American heritage? They used to have gambling casinos in the old Sioux territory? Is that their heritage?
I guess so. I must have missed that.
Yeah, the Comanches had bigger casinos than the Sioux. And what happened was they were all conglomerated under the Nevada tribes.
That was the Casino Wars of 1876.
Yeah, the Casino Wars. That's right. You missed that in U.S. history. The Casino Wars of 1814. That's when they were all consolidated under the Las Vegas Indians.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, sir. It's an honor.
All right. What are you going to do? Yes, I believe in conservation of animals. That's correct. That is correct. Eureka, California. Mike, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Savage, the topic you got made me laugh because I seen these knotheads on a special they had. All of them running around circles, wasn't the old ways, but they was all chasing these whales down in high-powered boats with high-powered rifles, just like their
ancestors. A bunch of fakers, all of them. Old ways, my behind. And you've got to put in the new ways. If they're going to live on the new way, then you got to give them the new laws. You're not killing any more whales, idiot. They're an endangered species, particularly a 130-year-old whale. Do you understand the metaphor of killing a 130-year-old whale, how painful that really is when you think about it?
It's a sad state. Hey, thanks for the call.
I don't know. It bothers me. It bothers me for some peculiar reason. And I don't know why. I don't know the whale. You could say, well, the guy didn't know how old the whale was. He probably didn't. That's why they shouldn't hunt any whales at all. The Japanese get to kill whales and put them in a can. The Norwegians get to kill a whale and put them in a can. What's it? Their heritage? Their heritage is having their daughters become Jezebels. That's their heritage. That's the heritage of Scandinavia. They went from being these wild Nordic people into this degenerate race up there. Everybody's a degenerate in that area, with the exception of those who emigrated to New York and then came to California. The whole country's sinking into a mess. No wonder they brought in the immigrants into those areas up there. They had to save him somehow. Here we go. Disagrees on whale hunting. Okay, Mark, tell us why you disagree on whale hunting.
Hey, how you doing? I listened to you for quite a while. I enjoy your show. I like your free speech. I disagree from the pure fact I come from a farming community. We still hunt. We use the meat for ourselves. We hunt deer and whatnot. And
I understand, but I don't think a deer is the same level of a noble creature such as a whale. Moreover, deer are not only in abundance. Here where I live, they've proliferated to the point where they're a pest.
Absolutely, yeah. You're
yeah. So I have no problem in hunting deer. It's a game animal. But a whale? Why, there's sufficient whales in the seas that we could just see them knocked off by these greedy Inuits?
Yeah, I got to forgive my ignorance, but what kind of whale is it?
Okay, I don't know. I don't know different things. This is called a bowhead whale.
I know there's certain whales, you know, that the Eskimos been hunting for years, and I don't think they're endangered.
Well, this is a 50-ton bowhead whale, so that's 100,000 pounds of blubber, of bone, and of whale meat, of muscle. I can guarantee you that guy's going to sell it off to a cannery. It has nothing to do with his Native American hunting. It has everything to do with greed and the bottom line and the greed for the greenback. He's not using it for himself. He's going to eat 100,000 pounds of whale meat? No way. He's not eating 100,000 pounds of whale meat. They don't want it anyway. They'd rather have, I don't know, Jack in the Box up there or Inuit in them, whatever they eat. I don't know what they eat up there. Codfish. Ricola. That Ricola guy goes up there. No, it's too cold for him. He's got shorts on, Ricola guy. Milton on WOR. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Yes, Milton. You're on the radio.
Yes, thank you. I don't see the difference between eating a whale or eating shrimp. I mean, you seem to like shrimp, but you like lobster.
Sir, if you put a shrimp and a whale in the same category, there's something wrong with your ability to analyze. You don't understand the nobility. It's like saying killing a mosquito is the same as killing a whale.
Well, I didn't say. You mentioned that what's bothering you is that they may be overfished and the endangered species. The reality is that the Eskimos are protecting the species. They have a maximum of 250 whales over 5 years.
Wait. The Eskimos are protecting the whales by killing them?
No, by having a limit to how much they can kill. And they don't kill it with modern weapons either. I've been up there. They actually use it for food over the winter. So they don't.
They use 100,000 pounds of the bowhead whale that the guy killed that was 130 years old. That doesn't disturb you either, that it was a grandfather whale?
Killed every day. Millions of pounds of beef are killed in the United States throughout the world.
Again, you're comparing a cow to a whale. I guess you don't see the difference. It's like saying an eagle is the same as a cockroach.
The difference is between a cow and a whale.
Oh, so what's the difference between a human being, then, and a whale, and a deer, and a rat, and a cockroach? Would you agree with me that there's a difference in levels of spirit or not?
I don't think you could compare a human being, because a human being has a God-given soul, which a whale does not have.
All right, so we're going to put aside a human being. Fine, at least I wanted to see where you were coming from. Good. So the human's different than the lower animals. We'll call them lower animals. Now let's look at the lower animals. Are you going to argue that as an organism, a whale is on the same level as a mosquito?
No, it's not the same level as an organism, but as far as a human being using it for his own purposes of eating and keeping sustaining the human species, of course you should be able to eat a whale.
Sustaining? You mean those Inuits who live on welfare couldn't live on foods other than a 130-year-old whale, Milton?
Will you give up your shrimp because you could live on McDonald's hamburgers? Would you do that?
I don't eat shrimp. Since I saw that the sewer shrimp coming in from China is contaminated, I haven't had a shrimp. So don't bring me into the issue. No, let's talk about Inuits killing 130-year-old whales. I'm saying that it's a travesty and it's animal cruelty.
Oh, I really don't think so.
But you're comparing a noble, advanced cetacean that can communicate in a phenomenal manner. You're obviously ignorant about the communication of animals of this level, if you think they're the same as a cow, Milton. And I'm surprised at you, because you probably think you're an intelligent man, and you probably are, but you're ignorant when it comes to animals. Whales are extremely advanced. You understand they're mammals. You know that, right?
I understand that, but there's no reason not to be able to kill an animal for food. Human beings.
So if you had the opportunity to do so, would you have killed the 130-year-old whale for food?
I am the orthodox Jew. I only kosher food. I have a different idea about food. But in general, I don't see a difference between slaughtering a whale or slaughtering a deer for food, as long as it's for the purpose of sustaining the human species, which is a God.
See, but that's the limitations of reading the Bible. You need to add some knowledge to your skull cap in addition to the Bible. You need to put additional knowledge in there, because that Bible was written thousands of years ago when there was unlimited game on this planet and very limited numbers of human beings.
Savage.
Milton, if we had not imposed limits on certain fishings, for example, off New England, all of the lobsters would be gone by now. If we had not constrained the fishing fleets of Massachusetts, many species of fish would have been wiped out by now. This has nothing to do with the Bible. This has to do with animal husbandry. Just on the level of preserving a species, you have to control the number of animals that are killed. But let's put that aside. Let us look at the whale as a complex organism. This amazing cetacean and its ability to communicate. Have you ever heard a whale sounds, Milton, in recordings? As it communicates with other members of its species of whale?
Do you know that ants communicate to a far greater extent than bees communicate? The lowly ant? That's not a reason not to kill an ant.
Well, okay, I agree with you. Yes, at a certain point, all life is sacred. I agree with you on that point. But that doesn't mean that the ant is the same as the whale.
But if a human being is going to waste the whale, just kill it for sport, I would say do not kill the whale. But the Inuits are killing the whale for food. I see no difference between the shrimp and the lobster and the whale.
Well, wait a minute. They're not killing it for food. I can guarantee you that this 100,000-pound bowhead whale that was approximately 130 years old, killed by this greedy Inuit, is going to be sold to a slaughterhouse, and it's going to be sold strictly for greenbacks. It has nothing to do with food. They have all the food that they want. They have diabetes up there for sitting on their behinds up there and doing nothing but watching television. And he's not using the ancient ways to hunt that whale. The guy's using high-powered boats, high-powered harpoons, tracking devices like GPS. The guy himself is a criminal. He should be hunted. And that Inuit should be tried for animal cruelty. But Milton, on one point we agree, which is that the DNA in all animals is very interesting. It's God-granted, God-created. I agree with you on that level. And there's a sacred element to all living things. Don't you, as an Orthodox Jew, make a prayer over everything you eat?
I make a prayer of everything I eat, and I understand that God gave us the food in order
to... Well, hold on. Wait a minute. Let's go into that. What prayer do you say before you eat meat?
I thank God for creating the meat that I can kill and eat. I thank God...
That you killed it in Brooklyn?
Kill and eat.
You went and killed the meat in Brooklyn?
I didn't kill myself in Brooklyn. First, I'm not.
No, you went to Moish the Butcher, and he got it from a guy who got it from a guy who got it from a guy who killed it. But let's put that aside. What does the prayer say for the people who don't understand the prayer? The religious Jewish people make a prayer over every morsel that they eat. Is it the same prayer or are they different prayers?
Different types of food are different prayers, but the general idea of the prayer is...
Whoa. So they're different prayers for different foods. Now, why would God in his wisdom have mandated to the Jewish people to make different prayers for different foods? Why would he have not made one generic prayer for all foods if they were all the same and all on an equal level?
Some people enjoy some foods to a great extent than they enjoy other foods, and some foods.
So, but then God recognized that foods vary. Then, at least from the point of view of humans' ability to enjoy them, so God then recognized that there are differences between the animals. Correct? Some animals you can't eat according to kosher food laws, right, Milton?
Right.
But all right. Now, why would God have prohibited you from eating, for example, insects, or prohibited you from eating certain? Land creatures, or you can't eat reptiles, for example, according to kosher food laws.
Okay, hang on. Before I go to break, you need to know this. There's three kinds of people. Those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened. These are tough economic times, but tough people can make things happen. Like Jenny. This is her income at home story. Here's what she wrote. I spent my life working in the corporate world with far too little time with my kids. Then out of the blue, I got laid off. I was looking for a job when I learned about incomeathome.com. So I ordered my decision pack, got a call from my coach, and got started. In my first full month, I made $1,300, and I'm on my way to making more than I've ever made. And I do it around my family's needs. Now look, some earn less, many earn more, and some earn a lot more. So go to incomeathome.com to see the results you can expect. No matter your age or education, you can literally earn money from your kitchen table. Make it happen for you and your family at incomeathome.com. Write it down, incomeathome.com. You got it? Incomeathome.com.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
My father was an immigrant. Yeah, he came here when he was 13 or 7. I don't even know. He was not born here. I was born here, and he was a citizen when I was born here. I'm not an anchor baby. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an anchor baby. But I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world, so I really speak from, let's say, a knowledgeable position about it. I understand what it's like to live in a poor household with many people. Trust me, we lived in a place... We didn't even have a bedroom in the Bronx. And I think about it. There was one bedroom, and there was a tiny living room with a fake fireplace. And I remember we hung fake stockings on the fake fireplace. I thought Santa would give me a gift. So, you know, part in the old world, part in the new world. My grandmother didn't speak a word of English in the house. She spoke the old languages from the old country. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking about it now. And she was so wonderful. Oh, did I love her. God, did I love that woman. She was so beautiful. Very stoic, very, very Russian, this woman. She spoke to me in Russian, by the way. I don't think you know that. I never told you that. I am not a Russian language speaker, but it's strange. I can understand the language to a certain extent. And it's a very hard language for an American to learn, incidentally. It's not an easy language. The alphabet's very complicated for an English speaker. I can just imagine how hard English is to learn for a Spanish speaker, by the way. It's not an English is a tough language, incidentally. Very tough. But in my home, my parents spoke only English. So to make a long story short, here I am, man-child in the promised land. And when my turn came to assume my mantle in this country and my chosen profession, they said, white men need not apply. The positions are closed. So you can understand where I was coming from. So to make a long story short, I cut a virgin demo in 1993, and I sent it out to about 220 radio stations. I get a return from... about 5 to 10 of them. And 5 of them say, that's really good stuff. Would you like to work on our station? I remember to this day, one of them was in Boston, of all places. I don't remember the station that said, we like what you did. But nevertheless, I was living in San Francisco, as I am now, and one of them came from a local station, and the guy says to me, good stuff. Would you like to come on in and talk to us? And then they gave me a fill-in. Anyway, here's the Virgin demo, 1993, Savage's Virgin demo, play 01.
Now, direct from the towers above Manhattan, it's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God, and now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week, because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day, in every way, we're getting assaulted. Look at these questions before us today. Look at the questions before us. You know, they say that I'm to the right of Rush and to the left of God. I really don't think that that's funny. I really don't think that's funny at all. Do immigrants carry diseases? Are lawyers really humans? Is white bread safe to eat? How come women with mustaches, with peace and love and turtle-saving bumper stickers, are the most likely to cut you off on the highway? Is Bill Clinton's mother a lesbian? By the way, a quick note. Nazis, skinheads, KKK, don't call me. Crawl back into your bunkers. You've given true conservatives a bad name because you permit the sick leftists to paint all conservatives with the fascist brush, okay? Don't call me. Do Labor Secretary Reich's feet touch the ground when he's seated on talk shows? I don't know. But these are some of the questions that I think we have to answer here. Because
all right, let's pause. You see how daring this was? Do you see how good? Now you say, well, it's commonplace today. It was not commonplace in 1994, by the way. It was really daring. It broke open new ground. I changed the media landscape. And that's it. That's how I started. Then I did a show. I'll never forget it. I'm going to just tell you the story, and then we're going to move on. I'll never forget it. So the local station manager calls me and he says, would you like to fill in? I said, sure, I'll try it. Now, I had never done radio except on book tours. I had done 10 national book tours where you go around and do radio and television. They were very stressful. But along the way, I remember various program directors had said to me, you know, you're really good on the radio. You should consider a career in radio. I had no way. How could you get a job in radio? It was as real to me as becoming an astronaut. Of course I wanted to do it. I didn't know. How would you get into radio? It seemed as difficult as becoming an astronaut. I had no way to do it, so let me put it to you that way. But let me tell you something. Desperation breeds creativity, and creativity breeds you take a lot of chances. And anyway, this is it 15 years later. I think that fate had a hand in this and God. I think I really was set out to do this from the beginning. All right, so he says, fill in. All right, the first show I fill in for is on a liberal talk station in San Francisco. It's still there. It's a powerhouse, 50,000 water. And he gives me a show to fill in for that guy is on the overnight show, and he's a hater of the lowest order, hates white people, panders to the most, let's say a Reverend Wright type, as exactly a Reverend Wright, all night long hate radio against whites, against America. He himself, of course, is living the high life, as is Reverend Wright in his new $10 million house. You understand how it works. Curse America and go and laugh all the way to the bank. You know, yeah. All they needed was the Kool-Aid, like a Jim Jones job. So that's the kind of show I didn't know, really. I never listened to the cretin. I'm never up in the middle of the night. So he said, all right, I go on the air, and I start to tell about illegal immigrants and this and that. I get hate callers like I have never encountered in my life. Because remember what my last incarnation was. I was the good doctor. I was the nutritionist and the herbalist who gave lectures around the world. And by the way, I had even given a lecture. You'll never believe this story. I don't think I've told it. Normally, I would give lectures about health and vitamins and nutrition in America. At one point, I was director of nutrition for a major international nutrition company. They sent me to Malaysia to talk about their products. My audience were all Muslim women. So I go into the audience. I could not believe it. They were all Muslim women. They were a great audience. These were moderate Muslim women who were interested in nutritional supplements. They received it very well. I spoke, and it was translated. And So I had been all over the world doing lectures, and I was usually very well received. And frankly, I was the beloved doctor kind of thing. Now I do talk radio, and I walk into a propeller of hatred from the left. I never encountered such hatred from the people that were the regular listeners of this guy's show. That night at 5 in the morning when the shift ended, remember what it was? I think it was 1 to 5 in the morning. I don't remember. I drive home from that station. The whole way home, I'm like in a paranoid state. I'm looking in the rearview mirrors. I thought I was being followed. I get home. The next day, I say to my family when I got home and they woke up, I said, I'm never going to do radio as long as I live. I said, I can't take the hatred of the callers. The liberals are the most hateful people I've ever encountered in the world. I said, no amount of money on earth would be worth doing this. I called the station. Actually, they called me the next day when I woke up, and they said, wow, you did a great job, Savage. would you like to fill in again? I said, no, I would never fill in again as long as I live. I don't want to ever do radio again. Ask him. I'm not making it up. I said, well, they said, why? I said, I'm not going to go into a show like that again with these haters. They said, well, how about filling in during the day? I said, I don't know. I don't think I could do radio again. It's too hateful. The people who call it are full of hate, the left-wingers. Well, they said, okay, I'll tell you what. You won't have to do a night shift again. You'll do a day shift. And then, I swear, then I did a little fill-in on the day, and I shook up the whole local media, and then eventually they created a local conservative station, and I went on that. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Remember, I had a fairly good living. I was making a good living as an author and as a consultant, and I didn't want anything to do with radio, but the temptation was too great. And I got to tell you something else. Radio, you ask anyone in the media who knows how to do it right, they'll all tell you the same thing. Nothing in the world of media can compare to the high you get off radio. There's nothing that can compare to the feelings you get when you do this right. There's no performance in the world that equals radio. I don't care what you do for a living. Look, I wrote books. I'm not a Dostoevsky. I didn't write fiction, but I wrote really fine nonfiction. My nonfiction were all Persian miniatures. They're excellent. In fact, my first book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, is still in print. I wrote books to last. They were not just fluff. I was a craftsman as a writer. However, writing is a very difficult profession because it takes a year to conceive of a book, 2 years to write a book, till it comes out is like another 9 months. By the time it's out, you're not connected to the product anymore, to the work. There's no immediate feedback. And here's an interesting side note. I had an editor at Houghton Mifflin in Boston when I wrote A Maximum Immunity, a book that went into 6 different languages. It was a great book, by the way. It's still around. I mean, maybe it's a little out of date in some ways, but in terms of describing the immune system, it's a very good book. The editor, who was a really high-class old Bostonian, took me to lunch in one of the great Boston restaurants, and she said to me, you know, you really are made for radio more so than you are for writing. I said, are you insulting me? She said, no, listen to what I'm saying. She said, you're a guy who's got so much energy, and you're so immediate, and you can deliver an idea immediately from the top of your head perfectly. She said, you need immediate feedback. She said, you can't get that from writing. She's absolutely right. So there's nothing like radio. It's like riding a horse bareback. I don't know how else to put it. It's like speeding across a plain on a horse without a saddle. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Other forms of media are like riding riding the trotters at Yonkers. You've got a three-wheeled vehicle underneath you and a horse and a bridle. Or some may approach, let's say, riding in another manner. But there's nothing like riding a horse across the plains without a saddle while firing a bow and arrow. That's radio. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Houston, Texas. Carlos, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Carlos?
Yes, doctor. I just wanted to say that I think that most males on this planet, animal or human, are not monogamous.
Well, I've read that biologically the male is not monogamous, and that the institution of marriage is one created for the stability of the family. And unto itself, a man has to commit himself to the family by eschewing his sexual urges and focusing instead on the family instead of his desire to sow his wild oats on a regular basis.
Well, I can agree with that, doctor. I'm glad that you are kind of agreeing with me as far as.
Well, I am agreeing with you. I am. Biologically, the male wants to sow his seed in a wide variety of manner, disperse his seed, let's put it to you that way. The male is made that way. But the institution of marriage is designed to raise a family with a father. And as you well know, the healthier children come from a father and a mother. The nuclear family produces healthier children, no matter what the liars tell you in the psychological world. No matter how they lie to you, the child needs a mother and a father. It is a strain for some men, but it's not a strain for all men. I assume you yourself are not married, Carlos. You have not found the woman who you're willing to satisfy your urges with.
No, I've been married 40 years.
Oh. So how did you control your non-monogamy?
I didn't.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. Is this a confessional or a talk radio show?
No, it's just the truth.
All right, so wait a minute. So you're telling me you haven't married 40 years, but you have not been faithful?
No, I have not.
Now, I'm not trying to pry. It really isn't my business, but you, in other words, does your wife know about your impulses?
I've had many mistresses in my 40 years. I have several. Many, I would say.
No, but I'm saying, but is your wife aware of them?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's no way that you can hide women and children. And at my age, you get involved with a woman. She usually has children. You're not going to hide no woman and two kids or something like that from anyone.
But I'm saying, are you still married to the same woman that you married originally?
Yes, I am.
And does she know this is who you are?
Yes, she's very intelligent, and yes, she knows exactly who I am.
All right, you know what? Let me explain something to you. Many women will accept that the men are like, some men are like that, and they live with it, by the way. And apparently that's the lifestyle you chose, but of course most women wouldn't. And by the way, social mores are changing to the extent that many women would like to enjoy the same freedom in that regard that men have thought to be their privilege, and that's the problem today. And that's why many young women will not get married. They're not willing to suppress their sexuality for the sake of a family either, which is why the population is dying in the United States of America. The more highly educated they are, the lower the morality quotient. And it's absolutely true. The higher the educational quotient, generally, the lower the morality, the lower the LM, the LMQ. There's nothing you can do about it. And I've talked about this, and I think sexuality is always an interesting topic. I think that ultimately sexuality is very political, and I guess what I'm getting at here is that the left-wing establishment now is trying to declare a sexuality, male sexuality, in the traditional sense of very hypersexual male sexuality, to be an illness so they can declare it to be such and put it into the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual, whatever that may be. Virtually every act of a human being is now considered to be a disorder. When the day they put liberalism in the DSM is the day I'll start believing in psychology. Because as you well know, I've defined this as a mental disorder. There's no other explanation for the suicidal behavior of extreme liberalism, by the way. Now, to say Tiger Woods, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the Frenchie, who are caught in sex scandals, are suddenly sex addicts, I don't think they're sex addicts. They're hypersexual men. But I don't know that that's an illness. That's the way they are. And by the way, Frenchie's wife knew what he was doing. Everyone in France knew that he was a socialist perv. Everybody in France knew that this is who Frenchie was. But anyway, let's get back to the desire on the part of the liberal establishment to declare hypersexuality as a disorder. What do you think about that? Linda in New York, WOR, go ahead. What do you think?
I could say that I'm a... hypersexual if it's put that way, because I like men and I like to have sex, but it doesn't mean that I'm having sex with many men, right? I have desires, I think about sex in my mind, but that doesn't make me a sick person, right?
Well, but let's say in your daily life, let's say you're going around. Do you fantasize many men during the day? As many, like, say you're in New York City, millions of people. Do you often get like, oh, wow, he's great, blah, blah, blah?
If I find a very good-looking man, yes, I can think about it.
So in that sense, you're no different than a male. It's just that males think they're the only ones who do it. And by the way, a lot of men suffer guilt. They think there's something wrong with them because they can't stop obsessing about sex. But this is interesting. I think this was studied even in my day 30 years ago, and it was found that men fantasize about women almost all day long, even at work. They cannot stop fantasizing about sexuality, especially when they're younger.
Right.
But isn't that the nature's imperative? Isn't that what produces children? To have that kind of urge that's so overwhelmingly powerful and overwhelmingly strong, especially in young, viable people, is that not what nature designed us to have in order for us to find a mate and to have children?
Exactly.
Right. So in other words, it's normal to have that kind of impulse. And men should not... Yeah, at the end of the day, men or women who have these fantasies all the time, if it's not really wrecking their lives, what's... Why feel bad about it? This is who you are. This is how the machine set it up. You're supposed to feel those things. Now, on the other hand, there are those who sublimate that drive and usually produce great things, incidentally. If you can take that sexual energy, this is an amazing discussion. You got to understand that this is very Freudian, by the way, what I'm about to tell you, but I'm from another era. If you believe that Freud was correct, and I do believe he was the genius of all geniuses, he was the peasant avante of psychology. Of psychiatry. Nobody has ever succeeded him in his genius. And I've read all of Freud, I've read all of Jung, and I've read all of Adler. I have not seen anyone come along since. I know they are a behavioralist and they use medication, but in terms of analyzing things, Sigmund Freud in his analysis by saying that, in essence, I'll make it very simple. It's like trying to say Einstein developed a theory of relativity E=mc². I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. Freud said that we're all fundamentally sexual creatures and driven by our sexuality all of our lives, and all of our neurosis is derived from repressed sexuality. I think that's a fairly good summation of Freud's Freudian psychology, right?
Savage.